From Hospice UK and Dying Matters, this is the Dying Matters podcast. I'm your host, Eleanor McConnell. What songs do you want played at your funeral? I don't know about you, but for me, that's actually a really tough question to answer. It seems like a very weighty choice when you consider that for the people who attend, whatever song you choose will be inextricably connected with you in their memories. I have that with both my grandmothers. Something Stupid by Frank Sinatra and Love Me Tender by Elvis Presley are now songs that carry a very specific emotional connection for me, simply because they were played at their funerals. For some reason, it feels like a very important choice to get right, and I don't really know why. It's only a song, right? Just music. But hearing the music play is my strongest memory of both funerals. Hearing the songs brings back the room I was in, the people around me, the colours of the flowers. For that reason, I know that these songs matter, even if I don't understand why. For whatever the reason, music is hugely important to us humans. It helps us form relationships, connect with our pasts, and process what happens to us as we go about our lives. This week, I talked to two people who have used the power of music to help people who are approaching the end of life. First up is Andy Landers, aka the Music Detective. Andy founded an organization called Playlist for Life, which is using music to do some amazing things for people who have been diagnosed with dementia.
Playlist for Life is a charity that was founded around 5 years ago now. I've been on the go that long. And it's a music and dementia charity. And what it is about really is promoting the idea that we all have a playlist of our life. We all have music that's been important to us in our life. I'm sure you like music. But that music often has autobiographical memories attached to it. So if we hear a piece of music and we close our eyes, we're immediately transported to another time, another place, a person, or a time in our lives. And that autobiographical memory also carries with it all sorts of emotional content with it too. So there are songs in our playlist that will make us smile, laugh, cry. And what we know is that in dementia, at least, our ability to respond to music is one thing that dementia can't destroy. We still see people towards the end of their lives living with dementia who are still, when they're not able to engage in communication that you and I might understand, but they are able to find the words of songs and harmonise beautifully as they sing it and almost want to get up and dance and enjoy the music again. So it's that thing that dementia can't destroy our ability to respond to music. And so we use that now to help a person living with dementia and their family and indeed professional carers to all connect with each other. Mm. The music is important, and the stories that are behind that music are just as important, because that enables us to connect and communicate with each other.
Yeah. So how did this idea sort of start? Because I think we all recognise the impact that music can have, but it's a different thing entirely to set up a whole movement.
Well, indeed. I mean, by background, I'm a nurse. And so 30 years plus ago when I started nursing, I witnessed this. I witnessed people with dementia in the later stages of dementia still responding to music, but didn't see the significance of it the potential for using that in a slightly different way other than just a social fun, let's listen to some music or have something in the background so we don't have silence. So the way that we began to do it differently was the founder of the charity, who is Sally Magnusson, who's a broadcaster and works on the BBC. She's a writer, a journalist. Her mother lived with dementia, and she managed to keep her mother at home for all of her dementia journey. And what the family found was that it wasn't any of the drugs that were offered or medications that were offered to their mum that helped her to stay connected. It was, in fact, the songs that had been the soundtrack to her life. So those songs that they had, as a family, had sung in the back of the car on trips and away, or around the piano, or parties and family gatherings. It was that music that kept them, Sally's mother, Mamie, connected to them and the rest of the family. And when Mamie was experiencing some challenges with her dementia, she didn't enjoy a bath. She was scared about this. And so what they did was found a song, and it was "It's a Lovely Day Tomorrow." And they would sing that to their mum, and she would be in the bath splashing around enjoying herself before she knew what had happened. And there were other things like going to the toilet. They would sing a rendition of "How Do You Solve a Problem Like Maria," and Mamie would be, you know, engaging with that. She was cooperative. She wasn't struggling with any what fears around it anymore.
I can imagine that song being ingrained in my brain at the very end.
Well, yeah, indeed. And so that's what the family did. They, whenever there was difficult moments that they knew about in their mum's life, they would use song to help her. And that's the idea of the charity. Sally asked that question, were they just lucky as a family that had found something that worked with just their mum, or was there something more generalisable to the population living with dementia? And indeed, that's what the charity does now. It goes out and promotes that. It provides training to healthcare professionals, social care professionals. It provides, we've got an app which we've got going now, which is free to download. And we promote that idea of build a playlist of your life, because it may well be a lifeline to you at some point in your future.
Mm.
And the interest from the hospice sector has grown, but hopefully going to be working with a few of them to deliver our training to the staff, because they see the potential for the legacy element of it, which is really interesting for us.
Yeah. So what does the training involve?
The training is really, first of all, is to give a little bit of the simple science behind this, how it works. This isn't just a fluffy thing. There is some hard science behind it, and in fact an increasing body of science behind it. So music psychology and neuroscience is beginning to now unpack some of the research around this.
Is it a different part of the brain?
It's all parts of the brain is the honest answer to it. It's not just that the music goes in your ear and your auditory cortex makes sense of it as music. It's that emotional bit. It's that that memory bit. It's the physical reaction you have to music. So it's just about every part of your brain. And that's why even in dementia, if it's all of your brain that is experiencing music, then they're bound to be out of the millions and millions and millions of neurons that you've got left in with your dementia, that those bits of the brain, those neural pathways and neural connections, are maintained to some level, and music stimulates them, seeming, in our belief, better than any other stimulus. So in reminiscence work in dementia, that there comes a point for many people when they no longer are able to even recognise themselves in a photograph. But this, the ability to remember the song and the words and the tune seems to stay. So that's the science-y bit. That's what we do in the training. We so that people don't just see it as being something fluffy and take or leave. There's a real basis for this. And the rest of the training is about two things. There's the music detective bit, which, me being the music detective, knows that there are certain parts of our biographical selves and the year that we were born and all of that, that it enables us to build a long list of possibilities that would be a playlist, that within that playlist of 100 tunes perhaps, 5, 10, 15, 20, or whatever number would be ones that would have an impact on you. And so there's those detective skills as part of what we do in the training. And the final bit is not just to say, okay, it's Wednesday, it's 2 o'clock, it's time for your music. It's to help people to understand that if we schedule this into somebody's care when they would benefit most from it, then that's the best use that we can make of it. So, as I said, with Mamie, with the bath and with the toileting, if we put music on before that, then it makes the whole thing a lot easier and the whole lot of care a lot easier.
Yeah, and maybe better quality of life as well, if you're not as scared. Well,
absolutely. I mean, to start with, it's just fun.
Yeah.
Music's fun. You know, if we just now were to get Spotify out or whatever thing, and start to say, well, what was, and play one and I play one, you play one, we would have fun. But it would also be that we'd learn an awful lot about each other and that. So, yes, your quality of life of having a sense of fun, being less depressed, being less preoccupied with your aches and pains, being lots of that stuff. But also, we would have fun and but it would ease our lives. It would make our lives that bit better. And we would learn that much more about each other. That the way I would look after you if I was your carer would have to be influenced by it. If I know 20 songs and 20 stories about you, gosh, that's a lot I could learn. And that must then make it different the way I would think of looking after you.
Yeah. So tell me more about the music detective bit of it.
Okay, so the music detective that's the persona I've got. But what we're trying to do is create an army of music detectives, people who will go out and develop playlists that might be useful to other people. So we've got all sorts of music geeks and people with lots of musical experience saying, well, I can build you a playlist of the top 10 double bass tunes, you know, that. So that's one thing. But to become a music detective, what you've got to be is pretty nosy, I say. I don't know if you're familiar with the term. So you've got to be a bit nosy. You've got to ask lots of questions. And that can be difficult when you're working with somebody in later stages of dementia.
Yeah.
So you're probably going to have to ask lots and lots of questions of other people as well. So family members, friends of that person, maybe the parish priest or whoever would be the person, the people that would know that person. But we also know about this psychological phenomena called the memory bump. And that's a period in our lives for arguments, we'll say between the ages of 10 and 25, some would say 15 and 30, but that sort of period of our lives when we harvest more memories than at any other time in our life. And at that time in our lives, it's music's a big part of it. We sit and listen to music at that time in our lives more than we do at many other times. And we build our own playlists on our mobile devices or smartphones or tablets and things now. I mean, we mentioned Spotify, other platforms are available. but that time in our lives is when we have lots of memories and lots of music attached to them. So falling in love for the first time, having, kissing for the first time, going to school, going to clubs, hanging out with your mates at the, wherever you did that, the swing park or whatever it was. Music was very often part of that. And how we style ourselves and dress and so on is often influenced by the kind of music we listen to too. So if I know that the years that you were 10 to 25, I can say, well, there's probably a lot of music in that period in your life. And what we've got, a guy called Peter Gresh helped us to do this. And he found out what the top 100 tunes from the last 100 years were. Mm-hmm. So I can go to those years now in a book that we've got, and we've also got Spotify playlists for each of these. I can go to those years and know that some of the music in those years is yours, and I test it out with you. So if you can't tell me yourself and you have dementia, I can, just by watching the reaction that you have to the music that I play, whether you like it or not.
Mm.
And then hopefully that becomes the start of a list of possibilities. We refine the playlist down and down and down. And then hopefully, as I say, we gather some stories around that music. So where did you go to school? What clubs were you in? What job did you do? Where did you live? How many brothers and sisters did you have? That kind of stuff I can build. And hopefully then build stories around each of those bits of music. Probably not all of them, but there'll just be music on there that you like. But for the ones that we have stories to, what that enables the music detective to do then is to write that down. And we've got a journal on our website that you can download for free and write up what the song was, who sang it, and what the story or the reaction to the music is. And that enables me, if I'm looking after you and you have dementia later in your life, when you're perhaps struggling to talk to me again, that I can still talk to you and tell you about the memories that we have around the music. So I can say this was the song that you used to listen to in the cafe bar in Malta when you went on holiday to Valletta every year. So, and that enables great, I suppose, a sense of respite for family, particularly later in a journey when perhaps a person's transitioned into a care setting. And
they know that their carers can make that personal connection as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think we've got documents now and care plans, you know, this getting to know me kind of idea at the front of a care plan. But the problem with that is it's quite a small amount of information. It doesn't get into the uniqueness of an individual human being, you know, whereas a story about your first kiss or the songs that you walk down the aisle to, or, you know, those are yours and unique very much to you. So that, as I say, must make the way that you look after somebody quite different. So we want to promote the idea. We want everybody from point of diagnosis, if not before, to begin to think about building the playlist. You know, so you're years and years away if you were to develop dementia, but to sit around the kitchen table and play music and talk about your music to each other, to you, your partner, your friends, your family.
Yeah, that's the thing. And it's not just writing it down for yourself, is it? It's telling other people.
It's telling other people, and it's having the fun of it. Just, you know, in the first place, you know, because I'm sure you still do that. I'm sure you with your mates or, you know, family or whatever will say, okay, it's your turn and you pick a tune and then another, you know, and it's usually over a bottle of lemonade on a Friday night, you know, that you do that. but do it in a way that you do then capture the story, and you're never too young to start, never too old to start. You know, but writing it down means that other people can see it and other people can learn from it and use it.
Yeah. Have you got yours?
I'm constantly building, of course, because when I hear...
You must hear new songs all the time.
Yeah, yeah. But and many of them actually come from other people that we playlist with.
Mm.
Can I tell you a little story?
Yeah, please.
Okay, so there was in September... I did a tour of the Western Isles, the Outer Hebrides, in a motorhome, and it was a tour where I was promoting Playlist for Life. So it was about 12 days I was away, and visiting as many dementia centres, as many GPs, as many hospitals as I could when I was there. And there were just under 700 people in the Outer Hebrides living with dementia. So I decided I wanted to give out 700 leaflets. Which I did. But I went to an island called Barra. If you've not heard of it, you must look it up. It's beautiful. And I went to this island called Barra. I went to a day centre there. And there was mainly ladies. There were some men there. But I was sitting with the ladies doing what I call live playlisting. So I was playing, getting them to tell me the tune and why. And I would play it from Spotify. And they came up with lots of songs that were country and western or the standards type songs. And I said to them at one point, no Gaelic songs. Thinking, obviously, very much Gaelic is still very much first language for many of these people. And so that was when it started to get really interesting and exciting. And they started asking me for Gaelic songs. And I managed to get some of the spelling right, but found one which in particular was, and it's called Fera Bata. What that is it's about a boatman being an island that's very much a lot of these songs are about romantic boatmen. And so I started to play this, and they started to join in. And they were singing this song beautifully, and I gradually turned down the music and they kept singing. And they were all looking at me, which made, and I became quite emotional about this. And because they were singing this song, which I didn't know the meaning of, but it was obviously lovely.
Mm.
And they were singing it to me. And it felt like they were singing it to me. And so that's now on my playlist. So I'm harvesting songs all the time from different, times in my life, different people in my life. I remember my father's playlist. I've found out what my mother's is. And so some of those songs are mine now, and that will not stop.
Yeah. I think it's such a great thing because it's so easy to lead on to, you know, the conversation of funerals as well. Because I think the jumping off point is like, what do you want played at your funeral?
Well, isn't it funny though, how when we don't talk about music in the way that we are advocating we should do with playlists, but we do get to a point in our lives when we start saying, well, what do you want at your funeral? Or when the person's no longer with us, then we say, what music should we play at their funeral?
Yeah.
Whereas if we've done the playlisting bit with each other and we know what songs mean to people and we know the stories behind those songs, then the music for the funeral is going to jump out at us before we, you know, we don't need to ask that question.
Mm.
And so, yeah, I think this is part of what we're doing as well, is saying to people what songs are important to you, you know, what's the meaning behind it, and then...
Yeah.
But imagine you've now got a playlist of your life.
Mm.
With all of those stories attached to it. But then you need to go into a care setting,
mm-hmm.
and that music isn't played for you anymore. It's gone. The only music that you'll get is smooth radio or whatever CDs, because they'll still be using CDs and CD players. So that's the music that you're exposed to, and all of that music that transports you to the places and the times in your life and the people that's important to you is not there anymore. I suppose crucially what I would want to say though is that there is, as I say, there's sound science behind this, but some of the outcomes aren't just about fun and reminiscence and memory and so on. What we've seen with people with dementia is the impact it has on their stress.
Mm.
So they're And dementia world now, it's all about stress and distress behaviours that people exhibit. And what we've seen is, as I say, if we can schedule this into somebody's care before they get distressed, then amazing things can happen. So we've seen improvements in people's continence because they're less distressed. They're able to say, I need to go to the toilet.
Yeah.
Or can somebody take me to the toilet? Less falls. Because if a person's less distressed, they're able to sit and relax in their chair and not panicking and trying to get up and falling over all the time. Improvements in people's nutritional state because they're able to sit and eat a meal, you know. So lots of improvements, but also an aid to less pharmacology, less drugs that have been used to keep a person relaxed and calm. Which is great because, as I say, very often these drugs are not that helpful. If you're sitting all day worried, then the only thing often you've got to think about is things like your pain. So the conversation is then all about pain. Whereas if you are listening to music and thinking about the memories, that's what you'll talk about, and there'll be less emphasis in sitting thinking about the pain, which is fantastic.
That was Andy Landis from Playlist for Life. If you've been inspired to make your own playlist of music that means something special to you, you can download the Playlist for Life app on the Apple App Store. It's only available for iOS right now, but it should be coming to Android soon. You can also get involved with Playlist for Life by setting up a regular playlist help point in your local community to help people with dementia find their songs. And if you're a carer, either professionally or for a member of your family, you can go on a training course, which will help you incorporate music into your care. Just go to www.playlistforlife.org.uk to find out more. Coming up next, I talk to Ben Slack, a musician who is helping people who are nearing the end of life write their very own songs. Stay with us. Dying Matters has lots of resources that can help you plan for the end of life and open up conversations with your friends, family, and loved ones. One of these is called Time to Talk, a leaflet that covers end-of-life care discussions and planning for people with dementia. It's rarely easy to begin conversations about end-of-life care, but speaking openly about the future can improve quality of life throughout the progress of dementia. These conversations must be started early, however, or vital clues for care provision can be missed. Time to Talk offers a wealth of advice covering topics such as what to talk about, when to talk, and what might happen if you don't talk. You can order copies, along with all our other resources, at www.shop.hospiceuk.org. My next guest, Ben Slack, also knows how important music is at the end of life. Ben is the founder of the Swan Song Project, which launched in Marie Curie Hospice Bradford almost a year ago. I ask him more about the project and how exactly it's using music to help people at the end of life.
So the Swan Song Project gives people facing end of life and people surrounding them the opportunity to write and record an original song. Primarily I've been working with patients in hospices, but I'm also like it's open to carers and family members and people suffering bereavements, like anyone around it, but it's primarily been the people with illness of terminal illnesses themselves so far. And then I generally do a one-to-one session. I'm open to doing sessions with, like in groups as well. But so far people have mainly done it on a one-to-one basis. And we sit down together and we write a song. It's fascinating. I really love it.
A song about their life or based on their life?
About whatever they want it to be about, really. So, like, it varies a lot in the content. Sometimes people worry about what they can write about, what they're going to say in it. Some people have an idea. They come and say, I want to write a song, for my partner or for my children or something like that, or about this time in my life. And that's great, and I can help them with that. Or sometimes people come in and have no idea what they want to write about, but they just like the idea of writing a song. And then we'll just have a conversation really until we find something that seems song-worthy, seems like it has some value to them that they'd like to explore really. And then I help them develop it and put it into a song format. So we do quite a few about messages to loved ones and things like that. And then just some different stories and things. It's fascinating. It's like it keeps surprising me the different every time I work with new people, the new things that come out of them. It's really fascinating.
So, how did it start?
Well, I had the idea for it probably about 2 years ago, and I've been doing like community songwriting work for quite a while, writing songs mainly with groups in different settings and things. And then I was thinking about my gran died a couple of years ago, and there was a time right near the end when she was pretty much non-responsive. Really, she was in the bed and things, and me and my uncle sang one of her favourite old songs to her, and it was like she kind of lit up. It was like this amazing reaction that I hadn't seen in a while from her, and she was kind of tapping her fingers on the side of the bed and things, and it was a really strong memory for me. So I think me and my mum were talking about it, and I was thinking how nice a memory that was, and I was thinking about how nice it would have been if I'd had a recording of my grandma singing with us. I thought that'd be really good, and then like being a obsessed with songwriting really, I thought, imagine if I had like a song she'd written herself, like what kind of things would she have chose to say in that song, and there's things about, I think, like remembering how people phrase things, that's one of the things that I find really interesting. A lot of people kind of say, oh, but everyone says the same things in their songs, and they don't. Everyone might have the same message at the core, but they'll phrase it in a different way, which I think is really powerful. So I was thinking about that, if I'd had just the kind of things my grandma would have said and the way she would have said them. And if I'd had that on a CD, that would have been that'd be amazing, really. And then I thought, like, that's kind of what I do with people, anyways, help them write songs. And I thought there's no reason. I was sure there was going to be a reason because I looked into it, and I couldn't seem to find anyone else doing it. I was like, well, there must be a reason why no one's writing songs for people in hospices. And I've still yet to find one. So I had the idea, and I kept telling, like, I was like sheepishly telling my friends and stuff like that, I'm thinking of doing this thing where, like, I might see if I can write songs for people in hospices. And I was always expecting someone to say, oh, you can't do that because of this. And I'd be like, oh, yeah, you're right. But then it just never happened, and it's gone from strength to strength since then. And yeah, we started the sessions last May at the Marie Curie Hospice in Bradford. And then I've worked in a couple of other hospices since. I'm starting at St. Gemma's in Leeds anytime now, which is really exciting. And it's just been going great. I really, really enjoy it.
So how did the first session kind of go? So I can imagine if I'm a hospice patient, might be quite an intimidating thing in a way.
Yeah, yeah, it's not for everyone, you know, like some of the patients. Because I think it can benefit people at different ways at different times of what they're going through, really. So on the first day I went and worked with patients, there was a group of the day therapy patients came in, and I kind of explained to them all about what it was, and a few of them were interested, a few of them weren't. And a few of them kind of like, some people think, oh, it sounds like a good bit of fun now, I might give it a go. And some people are like really, you know, keen to get a song right, really. So it's different for different people. Some people like, how much they want out of it, or if they just want it to be a pleasant activity. But I do remember my first session, the first song I wrote with someone, it's a song called I'll Be Looking Down. I wrote with a woman called Julie Proctor. And it came out really well. It's a piano ballad, but I was a bit terrified starting it that I was going to be able to do it. So like, I hadn't done most of my community work had been group songwriting, and it was just a bit different. So I was kind of confident that I'd be able to do it. But when the first song was done and she was pleased with it and everything, I was like, that's really good. It felt really good to know that it had been successful, part of me thought, yeah, it might just not work. I might just not be able to do this.
And why did you want to offer this to people who are at the end of life, specifically?
Well, part of it was, like I say, thinking back about my grandma and how powerful I thought that would have been for me. So it was one thing, so it seemed like a potent time for things like this to be powerful. And I think one of the things with my own, so there's kind of different elements to it, and one being like the therapeutic benefits for the people involved and what they get out of it. And then there's hopefully the comforting thing for their loved ones having this song and that they can listen to and have for a long time. And there's part of it as well is my fascination with songwriting I've always been fascinated with songs that deal with really difficult things. I think that's just, and I've always kind of chased that in a way of like looking for songs that deal with interesting, difficult subject, and death's obviously a huge one of them. So part of my perspective as well was that I just have to be fascinated to see what people would choose to write about in that situation. And I think there's a real thing about the songwriting process kind of helps people make sense of things. So that's what quite a lot of people have said, that it's like, it's just giving them an opportunity to think about what they're going through, and then you kind of like, I was picture it as like you're boiling it down, like you've got all this stuff going on, but then you've got to find a way of expressing it and articulating it in a relatively short framework, so you've got to kind of really boil it down to its core essence. And it's just, yeah, it's fascinating, and so it's great in when people kind of praise the project and how like good a thing it is for people, it's like, it's great that it's so good for the participants and their families. And it's also good for me, because obviously it's great in that sense, but it's a fascinating endeavour for me as a songwriter as well, that getting to work with people in these ways is just fascinating from an artistic perspective for me as well.
Yeah. So what is the process? Like, you talk to the person about anything and everything. Like, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Like, how long does this take?
Again, it varies a lot. So this one thing that's fascinating about the men as well is, and quite daunting, is at the minute it's just me doing the sessions. So when it comes to having to employ other people, I'm trying to analyse how the sessions work, because I don't have a set formula that I use for it. I kind of go in and respond to the individual. So far so good. It's been working, but it's always as so. And sometimes I do have moments where I'm like, what the hell are we going to do here? How are we going to make this into a song? But it always comes together. So I say, sometimes people come in and they'll say, I want to write a song for so-and-so. And some people write most of the song themselves. Some people, you know, I speak to them and they're like, oh, well, I'll do some writing at home and I'll bring it in for you. And then they come in and they've written like a great big poem or something like that, and then we just put some music to it. So sometimes they're easier like that. Some people have a brief idea, like, I'd like to write a song for so-and-so and I'd like to say this in it. And then I help them kind of flesh it out. And it's kind of asking, and the way I do that is I kind of ask them to just talk about it a bit more, and then I take notes a lot of the time, and I'm kind of paying attention for either things they say that feel like they've got some emotional value to them. You know, sometimes you can just tell if someone says something what has a bit more weight to it than everything else they've said, or certain turns of phrase that people use that are particular, just have a particular ring to them that seem like they might fit as a chorus or as a nice thing, something like that. So then I'll do that a lot of times. I'll have them talking and I'll just be listening and taking notes. And then I might go back over with them and say, so you, when you were talking then you said this, what I thought was really nice. And this seemed like it really meant something to you. So that might be a nice, you know, starting point here. Was there anything else you'd like to say about that? And people are always surprised. They're always amazed at what they say. When they say, did I say that? Like, yeah. You use that phrase and it's a really nice. People can, you know, underestimate how poetic they can be in their normal language, I guess. And it's the same with if people have no idea at all, I'll just start talking to them. And again, this is one of the things where I'm not really sure how it works, but it seems to have worked so far. We just start talking and I don't know, the conversation just seems to get to somewhere pretty deep pretty quickly a lot of the time.
And maybe those are things that they'd have never have expressed if they didn't have that specific outlet to do it in. Well, it's hard to say those kinds of things just aloud.
Yeah, definitely. And it's a lot of, it's kind of facing things that sometimes you might not have chose to face if you didn't have that thing, really. There's a guy I was working with yesterday who, his song's really powerful, and it's very different than a lot of the songs we'd had so far. And it's about, he was telling me all about his life. This was one where he had no idea what he was going to write about. I just came in and started talking. He was telling me about his life and how he had moved around a lot and things like that. And he was telling me all these different stories about his life. I said, you know, I think really it was just I was always scared of responsibility, and that's what it was. That's why I've moved around. And then so his song's kind of explaining that really about why he's lived the way he's lived, and he's saying he hopes then people who listen to it, who he may have like hurt in the past by moving on, well then if they can hear it, they'll see it from his perspective really, why, and that he's apologising to people who he's left behind and things like that. And but then he was saying to me yesterday, but he said that I wouldn't have done this without this process. Really, it wasn't something that I was thinking about, but it's been really therapeutic for him to come to it.
Is that something you've been able to kind of see? It's a hard thing to measure.
Yeah, it's a hard thing to. Well, patients often give feedback on things, and I'm interested in doing some like longer. I'm kind of still developing the best ways of measuring it. But yeah, there's been people have said some amazing things about it, really. And so I mean, like, and again, one of the reasons why, like, I got into songwriting, and I know lots of songwriters that I know do it, is because it's like it's a very therapeutic process, and like I say, it helps you kind of make sense of things, and there's just something very satisfying about the whole thing. So there's been lots of things people say. So yes, that's one of them, is it helps them communicate things that they may have found difficult to do otherwise, and that may be because it's just something that would be a very difficult conversation to have. These conversations with your loved ones, like maybe things that they haven't really thought about enough, they haven't given it the time, whereas with this then it gives them an opportunity to think through things and discuss them really, and decide what it is you actually really want to say. So if it's someone that wants, just engaging in a conversation with someone very close to you about a difficult subject matter can be very difficult, but if you're talking to someone neutral who is helping you boil it, point out what it is that's important to you. So that's been a big one, and the people have said that it's opened up channels of communication with people close to them when they've given them this song, and they've heard it and all this beautiful stuff in it which they didn't know about, and then it's kind of helped with that. Yeah, the making sense of the experience seems to be a big one, and the being something positive to focus on when, like, this guy that I worked with recently, again, he was in the hospice for a long time. And this was like, the only thing that he engaged with when he was there, really. And it was something to take his mind off his illness
focus on something. I imagine people are more keen to write songs about things that have happened to them in their life rather than their impending death sometimes.
Yeah. Again, it's an interesting one. So people kind of do, There was a guy, another guy I was working with recently, so we started writing his song. And it was about a story from when he was 19. And he sent me this story, and he was out in these woods in Canada, and he was walking and it was getting dark, and there was a bear chasing him. He said he could hear a bear coming behind him, and it was getting dark, and he was like, so he was telling me, it's an amazing story. I was completely gripped. I was like, that's your song right there. He was telling about, and he said then there was a light in the distance that he could see, and he was walking towards this light, and he was like, he could hear this bear kind of like things cracking and things behind him. And he said, I've just got to focus on that light and just get to that light, and then things will be all right. And then, so this is like become the metaphor for his song, really. And so I was working with him yesterday, and he was saying, I only just realised the other day, yeah, I thought I was writing about this story when I was 19, but I'm actually writing about my illness now. And it just, like, I was reading it the other day, and he said he just started crying because it just hit him that he kind of tricked himself into thinking he was writing about this story from when he was younger. And he said, but this is exactly what I'm going through now in the same way, it's just with a different thing. So that's an interesting way of doing things, of you telling me stories like that.
Yeah.
So that's a nice one. It's a positive thing for people to focus on. And people, like, again, it's the idea that a song lives on, you know, like, that a song just, that lives on for a long time, really. People that have, spoke to some people who have small children, and the idea that then, you know, this, the child who didn't get to know the parent that well, but then has this CD of something that the parent wrote for them that they can live, you know, they can listen to for the rest of their lives, really. I think there's something really comforting in that for people. For it's like, you know, it's a permanent thing of like, I got to record and say what I needed to say, and that lasts with the people that they care about.
Yeah. And does it make you feel good or sad?
It's incredibly uplifting. It's one of the things, when I started it, I was concerned about my emotional resilience, I guess, with it, how I'd be able to manage it. And it's something I get asked about a lot, is how I manage it. And so far, so good. It's because, I mean, it's sad when you lose people. I lost someone recently who I'd been working with for quite a while, and it was, you know, I got pretty close to him, really, and that hit me a bit. But it's like, it's you go into these relationships knowing the situation, really, and it's the positive element of having got to spend that time with someone, doing something productive and positive that they enjoyed in a difficult time, outweighs the difficulty of losing someone, really. So I mean, there's difficult times with it, but the positivity of it massively outweighs them. Because, like, so nobody's written a sad song yet, which, like, again, I thought,
oh, really?
Yeah, they're all beautiful, they're all like really uplifting, and again, and it kind of, you know, makes you take stock a bit of your life, with like people complaining all the time, and then you write a song with someone who's you know, facing the end of their life, really, and have, you know, to tell you about their lives, and then they're there being really positive and wanting to tell this message, you know, like, for people to, you know, to do good things and not feel sad and all. It's really uplifting, the way, the strength of people in difficult times to want to share something so positive and not be like, oh, poor me, I've got this this thing. It's like, there's been none of that. It's all been, you know, I want people to kind of inspire people in some way, or nobody wants to have a pity party for themselves with it. It's all so for the most part, I leave every session I leave really uplifted and feeling really good about it.
Yeah. And so Dying Matters is all about helping people to talk more about death, dying and bereavement. Why do you think that's an important thing for us to do?
I think, again, that's another one of the reasons why I thought this would be a fascinating thing to start doing, was because it's like, it's such a common fear, isn't it? Like, is it meant to be the second most common fear behind public speaking?
Oh, I don't know.
I remember that's still true, and I remember Jerry Seinfeld, the comedian, used to always tell a joke about that. He said, death's second most common fear behind public speaking, which means if you have to be at a funeral, most people would rather be in the casket than doing the eulogy, which always tickled me. But that is, it's such a common fear, and it's inevitable, isn't it? It's like, so that kind of seems strange that the thing people fear most and people don't want to talk about the most is one thing that you can't avoid, and that affects everyone. And the way to deal with fears is to break them down and understand them better, I guess. And talking about things is one of the best ways of doing it. And sharing people's viewpoints and experiences, and it just, yeah, it kind of, it breaks the, yeah, a monster's always scary. It's when you can't see it, isn't it? When you don't face it, and then when you understand what it is, it's like, it just changes it and makes it more easy to manage. So that was another thing I thought with this, with, and why the sharing of the songs was kind of something I hoped would happen. Because I thought the more, and again, I think the music makes things more accessible. I think it's, people will listen to the songs for multiple reasons, and they'll get then the, what people, so what people facing the end of life are actually going through and what they choose to say in their songs. And then hopefully that then, it gives people more perspectives on what it's like, and breaks the fear around it a bit, hopefully, for, or changes people's perceptions of what it's like to be in that state, really. And as I say, though, the fact that the whole songs are positive so far, it certainly has changed my viewpoint on what end of life has to be like. Cause, and the people are, they're so, they're just amazing, the people that are grieving you. Like, they might have a few days left to live in there. They're cracking jokes and telling you all these great stories, and it's like, you know, it's just, and just being so respectable, I guess, and like handling that situation with so much integrity and strength, and then producing something beautiful in it, really, yeah, it's just like really inspiring.
And I'm so pleased that Ben has very kindly given us permission to share one of those inspiring songs with you. When you're gone is Ray's song. Ray attends day hospice every Friday, and after his song was written, he sang it live with Ben in a concert at the hospice for an audience that included his two daughters. There's nothing I can really say that the song doesn't say already, so to play us out, here's Ray and Ben with their song, When You're Gone, You're Gone.
Giving in, and when I'm ready, I'll die a happy man. I've had a great life than what I wanted to do. I've met some great people, a great family too. And when you're born, you're dying anyway. You've got to get out and enjoy it while you can. I'm not going away, yeah. Don't write me off. I am living and dying happy man. All I want to know, that my kids are okay as they carry on along the way. When I'm gone, don't be arguing, falling out. I love you all. You can have no doubt.
Cause when you're born, you're dying anyway. You've got to get out and enjoy it while you can. I'm not going away, yeah. Don't write me off.
All I want to know is that my kids are okay as they carry on along the way. When I'm gone, don't be falling out. I love you all. You can have no doubt.
Isn't that amazing? Thanks so much to Ray and Ben for sharing their song. You can hear more of the Swan Song Project songs on www.swansongproject.co.uk. The Swan Song Project is currently a finalist in the People's Project, where Big Lottery Fund, ITV, STV and the National Lottery are teaming up to give the public a chance to decide how National Lottery funding should be put to good use in their local area. The winners stand to gain £50,000 of funding, and if he wins, Ben hopes to use that money to employ a full-time worker to help the project grow and expand. You can vote until the 30th of April at www.thepeoplesprojects.org.uk. The Swan Song Project is listed under the Calendar North region. Many thanks to both my guests this week, Andy Landers and Ben Slack. And special thanks also to the amazing Bernadette Ryan for our theme music. Dying Matters is a part of Hospice UK, the national charity for hospice and palliative care. If you enjoyed our podcast, make sure you rate and review us on the iTunes store so that we can reach even more people and get everyone talking. What songs would be on your playlist for life? Tell us by getting in touch on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Dying Matters.